This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, it's Danny. I'm 45. I'm from Manchester. I joined the OTI community in October 21. I was sceptical at first because I'm not on any sort of social media, and I've been in a couple of other very large online sober communities before. I was amazed right from the offset at the involvement that Shaz and Ben have in the community. I thoroughly enjoy the Zoom calls. And I've met some pretty good pals along the way that I didn't realise I was in the market for. We've been out for hikes. It's just great. I've been in touch with like-minded people, and it really has been a game changer. So I'd encourage anybody to give it a go.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk. Welcome to Over the Influence. If you are joining us for the first time, here is a quick recap as to who we are. My name is Sharon Hartley. You can call me Shaz, call me Shazza. I am 3 years, 7 months alcohol free. It is marvellous. Life continues still to get better and better and better. Long story short, because we've got a fab guest that we want to chat to on today's episode, and I'm trying not to get diverted like I usually do. Long story short, she said, I used to be a daily drinker. It would be at least a bottle of wine. Never opened two bottles on a school night. Would maybe have the odd vodka and coke or vodka and tonic or whatever. Ranted up at weekends, blah, blah, blah. Hit my 40s and I thought, you know what? This is getting a bit dull. This is getting a bit repetitive. Let's have a break. I took that break in September 2018, and I am still on it. My life has changed so much for the better. It is marvellous, and we now get to share all this on this brilliant podcast, Over the Influence. So thank you so much for joining us today. I say it every single time, I don't do this on my own. We have got my glamorous co-host, Freddie. He is in New Zealand. His teeth are looking whiter, and your hair as well. Have you had it dyed, Freddie? Morning, love.
Not yet. My roots are showing, so I was going to get it redone for winter. But you know what it's like, Shaz, when your roots start going through, and like just at the end, just get dry as a bone as well. But you know what? I'm Freddie. I'm here to add that rugged dose of macho-ness to the podcast. For so many years with alcohol, I was trapped inside. But then I chose to stop drinking, and I got outside. That's a hint to today's guest. I got outside, explored the world, moved halfway around it to go to New Zealand, found more confidence, more joy, more happiness. This sober lark, it ain't always easy, but I'm still here, still kicking, still proudly over the influence. And I can't wait for today's episode. It is going to be a stormer, I know it. And so, I'm Freddie, and I'm ready for action.
Freddie, he's always ready.
Freddie's always ready.
Oh, dear God. Ben, we have got producer Ben no longer in the background. He's very much in the foreground. He's fabulous. He's had his own alcohol-free journey documented on this very podcast, much to his surprise. Ben, how are you doing?
Yeah, good. I suppose I'm kind of accidentally alcohol-free. I gave it up for 3 months and had the full intention to drink again. But got to 3 and thought, oh, this feels all right. I'll try 6. Got to 6, thought, oh, let's try 12. Got to 12 and thought, I don't ever want to drink again. Objectively, I like the person I am now more than I liked the drinking version of me. To the point where everything's changing. I was talking to you guys on the Premium podcast before we started recording this. I'm planning a stag do. It's my stag do next year. The boys are planning it. My two brothers are my best men. And they're planning it, but they want my input. I'm actually planning a sober stag do, of course. I'm going to go on a spa day. I'm going to go on a spa stag. That's what I want. I don't want to drink to oblivion and get tied to a lamppost. I want to be pampered and have a hot stone massage. Freddie, you've inspired that one, so thank you. But so much stuff changes. It's amazing how much stuff changes when you go alcohol free. And just that thought that I actually want to have a spa day for a stag do. Like, it's nuts. I don't know why I'm embarrassed about saying that. But
you shouldn't be. You should be loud and proud about wanting a spa day.
That's what I want.
I've got to say, I'm really happy that our guest is here, because usually it's just me flying the macho, rugged, outdoorsy flag like some kind of hardcore Bear Grylls. But I think with our guest today, then I'm just saying thank the Lord. It's an extra testosterone to help me out with all this blokey stuff.
Oh, poor guest. You must be sitting there thinking, what the bloody hell have I got myself
what
into?
The hell am I so
what is going on? Enough about us. Thank you for tuning in. I would love to introduce today's guest on Over the Influence. He is called Harrison Ward. He is based in the beautiful town of Ambleside in the Lake District, aka Fell Foodie. Harrison, for the purposes of this Zoom call, do you like my background? By the way,
it's wonderful. Whereabouts is it?
I don't know. It just looked a bit Lake District-y.
It's quite rugged. I think there are a little bit higher peaks than the lakes in that one, but it looks like a gorgeous day. So again, probably not the lakes.
Yeah, you're probably right there. I thought I would make the effort. I saw your Instagram, okay, and I saw the words alcohol-free, outdoors, mountains, cooking, Fell Foodie, and I thought he sounds right up our street. Welcome to the podcast. How are you? Tell us a bit about yourself.
I'm not so bad, thank you. Though I am testing positive for COVID this week, so that's not the best of things.
Oh, but other than
that, yeah. So mainly indoors this week, but otherwise grand. So it's easing up now, I think. But otherwise fine. And again, as you mentioned, in this sort of glorious part of the world, so there's worse places to be stuck looking out the window too.
Oh well, thank you for joining us, COVID positive. I hope you're I hope you're voiceless. I hope you're not feeling too rotten
on the back end now. So I think I've been I sort of blended in from having the flu last week into COVID. It's been a nice 2 weeks of sort of a nice phlegmy sort of losing the voice and all sorts of actions. So yeah, not so bad. But these days, again, feeling much better in the morning than we used to in days gone by. So it's nothing compared to the days of old.
Absolutely. Well, let's start there. Let's rewind to those days of old. You're approaching 6 years alcohol-free, which is just incredible. I've seen a fair few photographs of before and afters and now what you're doing. Before we talk about all that, would you mind, Harrison, just taking us back to those days gone by and what prompted this massive change in your lifestyle?
Absolutely, yeah. So it's very much something that stemmed really all the way back into my childhood, really. I think it was something that really I was quite an outgoing sort of child growing up sort of outside Carlisle, so quite a rural area, sort of used to having the outdoors on my doorstep from a very young age. But it was something that was quite a fine sort of childhood, really. Outgoing, sort of plenty of friends, used to go out quite a bit, quite active. But I found myself being hit with this complete sense of like self-loathing, sort of going through puberty, insecurity, and sort of real lack of motivation, really, which is something that I later found to be the start of what has been a journey with depression. This was something that really continued all through my sort of adolescent years, something that I kept very much to myself. I didn't really tell anybody about it, family or friends. Didn't want to be that burden upon people with my, I suppose, down thoughts at the time. Again, something that I just struggled through with, but really was sort of affecting sort of my day-to-day outlook on things. I wasn't doing the activities I used to enjoy. And really at its worst, it was bringing me to sort of points where I considered not even being here at all. So it was something that I was battling quite on the daily. And during this time, I spent a lot of time working in the hospitality trade alongside my studies at school. And I guess this sort of escalated in from working sort of in the kitchen, sort of back of house, into sort of more waiting onto tables, upon getting to 18, where I then started working behind a bar. So this was really my first sort of interaction, I guess, with alcohol and that sort of side of things, both the social element as well as it in a transactional way in the workplace. Now, really, at this sort of time, I wasn't really someone that was, I guess, sneaking alcohol behind the back of my parents. I wasn't someone who was really down the sort of the local park with the white lightning bottle or anything. I was someone who was quite really, didn't really appeal to me much until at 18. But of course, that sort of age into a British culture, it's seen as quite a coming of age type thing, rite of passage, really ingrained into the culture. And as well as sort of this initial stages of getting alcohol into my life at this point, it really seemed to appease those sort of dark thoughts I had from quite a while. Allowed me to become the sort of person I was previously. Allowed me just to forget all of that stuff that really I was going through in my rest of my time. So initially, it was a bit of an escape, if you will, from the darkness that was now sort of clouding my mind on a daily basis. So initially, alcohol was very much seen as something that was quite medicinal for me. I took it sort of on a sort of a level where I quite enjoyed heading out after work as much as possible, even the local town I was from. Made a lot of friends, I guess, who had quite a similar lifestyle, if you will, so about that sort of way. And joining those under the guise of being quite social. But really, I was still sort of hiding what was underneath the cracks, I guess, in this sort of front. And I ended up going to university in York at 19. And at this point, I was quite much already quite a daily drinker in the pub environment, spending most of my free time in there, either working or the other side of the bar. And was regularly sort of consuming quite heavy amounts at this point already, even at 19. So I'd got to sort of maybe like 10 pints an evening. And heading towards university again, you've got that big sort of show, new people all coming around again. The big sort of premise, the big catalyst in the for those activities is generally alcohol again. So Freshers' Weeks, various bits like that, meeting new people. Again, gaining that Dutch courage to meet these random strangers that have come together from all around the country. And I quickly found myself back in the hospitality environment too, getting some part-time work to go alongside my studies. But again, I hadn't really dealt with, I suppose, the initial issues that I was going through from this sort of young age. So quite quickly, I found myself falling back into this downward spiral with alcohol and chasing that sort of initial high, I guess. At this point, my tolerance was increasing, I guess. So I was trying to get to that point of escapism that I used to get from alcohol. Now it took further and further to get me to that point and really started to completely fall under the spell of it, really. So this what I've had first thought was quite medicinal for me, quite quickly became a poison. And my studies quite quickly fell by the wayside. Alcohol became my sole focus. I went full-time in the employment in the hospitality element. Probably more the fact that it was more kid in a sweet shop at that time. It suited my lifestyle. I was able to go about my business and maybe hide what was becoming, what I deemed personally for myself as alcoholism. And this really began to spiral to the point where I actually ballooned in weight to over 22 stone. I took on smoking full time and was regularly drinking sort of over 20 pints a day at this point.
Wow.
And literally brushing my teeth with the stuff the minute I woke up, drinking at work, always a coffee cup on the go filled with the stuff in that pub environment. And was living in, at this point as well, in the pub hotel side of things. So literally was living and breathing this lifestyle every day. It was something that really, I hadn't really come to terms of how far I'd fallen with the substance at the time. Again, sort of heading out into my early 20s, my 21st birthday, again, quite traditionally a big sort of moment, always usually fueled by alcohol. A lot of friends came to visit York, back from Cumbria, and was a big glorious piss up, if you will. So a big six-day bender, which was pretty standard practice for me by that point. But upon the sort of the sixth day of all these people tending to go home, back to their places, I quickly sort of had this feeling that I was very much alone in this city. I was quite a solitary drinker. I wasn't someone that stayed inside at home. I didn't like being in the room, my own sort of thoughts with the four walls. So I always went out for that sort of social premise, if you will. But in reality, it was me getting my quota to drink to real blackout oblivion, to shut off my mind, to stop these thoughts I was suffering from. I quite quickly realised I was alone in this city and just continuing the way that I had been for the past few years, just completely self-medicating and bringing myself really to a point where I was just existing. And I mentioned before some of the points of my real, real lowest moments where we didn't want to be here at all. And it came to that sort of point where I felt as if no longer was this become a medicine now. This had become a poison. It was dragging me further and further down. I was racking up some quite big debts. Obviously, my health had taken quite a big turn. And stumbling home one night in the early hours of the morning from a night out, I decided to call home from a payphone and with the only intention, really, of just saying goodbye to my mum. And I lived quite close to the train tracks in York at the time and just felt as if I had no real escape, really, from my own mind anymore. Alcohol had provided that escape initially, but was now in tandem working against me to further drag me into this darkness. So thankfully, it was something I didn't go through with and should have really become that sort of catalyst for change at the time, on my 21st birthday. But quite quickly, upon coming home back to Cumbria and receiving some medical aid and attempted interventions at that point, I decided that no, the only way I was going to get through this and continue on trying to fight my own mental sort of appeasements was to head back and do exactly the same thing I had been doing for another 4 years. And it was really at this point that somehow I managed to find myself a partner at the time. And that was really something I'd always sort of looked for, I guess, someone to share those sort of experiences with, someone to sort of bounce off. But really, I was in two relationships at this point already. I was in a relationship with this person and also with alcohol. And the two didn't really collide. Obviously, the lifestyle was different. She was very much a 9-to-5 job. I was sort of pub hospitality environment, which the hours were all over the place. So had a chance to get my quota in between the two different working lives. And unfortunately, this came to a head at a few particular moments and really just pushed me further towards the bottle and the pint glass every time. And there's moments of attempted intervention at the height of what was that addiction really just pushed me further onto the drink side of things, really, which was my focus, which was my priority. And eventually I was actually unfaithful under the influence to this partner, which was really the moment that bubble burst completely and that relationship ended. But for me, it was more than just that relationship ended at the time. It was something that really sort of snapped me out of hitting this rock bottom moment, I guess, of losing that partner, those moments before of not wanting to be here any longer, of me coming to terms with really how far I'd fallen with this substance. And it was that day, really, the 6th of June, 2016, that I considered myself an alcoholic and I vowed to get sober to try and win back this partner initially and to try and become the person I wanted to be. And it was, yeah, it was completely an overnight decision. So I'd gone from drinking those complete heavy amounts for years to literally now, I suppose I'm trying to win back this partner and trying to prove that the person I'd become wasn't who I really believed I was. Would be a man that would be in the past and no longer in the future. So alcohol was, again, completely removed from my life straight away. I remember being sat outside the pub I worked in that day, just literally in tears. My boss sort of put me outside. Couldn't see, said so, so it wasn't right in me. I just broke down completely in front of him and literally sat outside for about 6 hours from this shift, at which point my colleague actually came to replace me on the evening shift and came straight out of a pint and said, "Here, I'll get this down, you know, this will sort you out." And I just turned to him and said, "I don't drink anymore, John. I don't drink anymore." And he just looked at me in sort of bewilderment. I mean, this is the person that really was like a human vacuum cleaner. I was just sat at the end of the bar day in, day out, drinking whatever was to hand, you know, drip tray specials, the lot. I was just constantly just not always out of my mind on alcohol, which was one who very much took the drink to quite a level. It just sort of sedated me further and further in time. I was always known as quite a polite drunk. I wasn't an aggressive person. Just someone that went about their business achieving this quota just to achieve escapism from life, really. And yeah, so that was the big day of the turnaround. And really, at that point as well, I realised I could no longer be in this city that I'd lived in for 7 years. So without saying goodbye to anybody overnight, I decided to give up alcohol. I threw my cigarettes in the bin and I left this city that I'd lived in for 7 years. No goodbyes, left my flat, my girlfriend, my job behind, and up sticks and came back to Cumbria, where I'm originally from. And at this point, I was completely open with the things I'd been suffering from. I popped it on my personal Facebook, exactly what I'd gone through, why I had to leave this city. And the outpouring of support I received from friends, from family, from acquaintances was hugely instrumental to this turnaround that I began on that day. And was the first time I'd shared those things publicly with anybody, really, the issues I'd been now suffering from for almost 12 years or so. And I threw myself into exercise initially to replace that big hole that alcohol had left. I mean, it took such a huge part of my life. I mean, daily sort of occurrences, and exercise was something that really filled that hole for me initially. So I tried to start getting out to the gym, started to run. And a lot of friends would turn up at my doorstep to sort of try and embrace these different activities with me. As you mentioned at the start there, I guess, Ben, sort of at the spa day type of thing, those things that didn't have alcohol involved in them. So again, it was this sort of way. And one particular friend turned up at my doorstep and said, "We're going to go for a hike today." And although being born in Cumbria, something I really neglected, I'd always thought of the hills as just hills, didn't really take in on board what they were about, other than maybe going for a tea and coffee in Keswick every now and again. That's about as close as I came. And I put on what I had to hand at the time, again, completely penniless, paying off my bar bills, paying off the last of my rent, racking up sort of credit card debts here and there, blowing a lot of inheritance I had all down my neck. And I put on what I had to hand at the time, which was an old pair of scabby trainers, a pair of swim shorts, and a jumper from Next that I used to wear down the pub on a Friday. And my friend took one look at me and said, "You can't go hiking like that." And he pulled over at a local outdoor shop on the way and popped this pair of boots on the counter and bought this pair of boots for me, which was a huge show of support, really. Something I'll never really forget. And then we pulled on further to the Lake District and basically pulled up at the car park at the base of Blencathra. For those that know, the lake's one of the higher mountains in the Lake District. And was literally frog marched up this fell side again, absolutely blowing up my arse. I mean, I'd done no exercise for the past 7 years.
You know, I love that technical term.
as you say, grossly overweight, just coming off this sort of substance, and again, just packing in the fags too. So a completely different world to the one that I was previously living. So that was, I suppose, not a brief interlude, but there you go. A step into where I came to where this journey began.
That's incredible. That is so much to take in. It's breathtaking. I mean, you've gone right back to being a little boy there, talking about been able to identify mental health issues way back when. And to where you are today, it's amazing. I'm sure I could talk for hours. I know Ben and Freddie will both want to jump in about this.
Yeah, definitely. I think, Harrison, it's such a powerful story. I think you've, in many ways, you sum up that all or nothing mindset that so many drinkers have, the way that it's going to be a case of, right, I've thrown myself into my drinking, and then you flick the switch, and then it's a case of, right, it was all, now it's nothing, and now I'm going to throw my all into something else. And I love that image of you as well, just like stomping up the mountain and sort of trying to get it done and just reach this. There's so many metaphors in there about reaching the peak and everything else. But I wanted to find out, so when you made this decision, you literally changed overnight, moved back home. Then what happened? Is there, you know, did you find it easy? Did you distract yourself? Did you, how did you get over that drinking craving?
No, I didn't find it easy at all. No, I think it's something that often sometimes can appear that way, looking back on the story and telling it so flippantly, I guess, and where it was. But in reality, that first sort of 3 to 6 months were absolutely the hardest period I've ever been through in my life, I think, on all fronts. I mean, I was going through literally alcohol withdrawal at the point. Obviously, I stopped overnight, which is not generally advisable with those sort of high levels of consumption I was having. Again, sort of other addictions such as smoking, throwing those in the bin straight away, fighting obesity in the same way, and also, I guess, heartbreak in a way for those who've gone through that sort of thing can be quite a difficult moment in itself. So really, it felt like my whole foundations have crumbled beneath me. And that, I mean, they talk about this rock bottom sort of moment that you can sometimes reach during addictions, and that's what it takes to sometimes spark you out. For me, it was very much that case. As you mentioned, that all or nothing approach. I mean, I'm the same with biscuits. You know, I can't put the packet down. It's just a personality trait, I think.
What's your choice of biscuit, Harrison?
Oh, I'd say chocolate hobnobs are probably my absolute kryptonite.
I had you down as more of a Tunnock's wafer sort of guy.
Well, I'll eat any of them, to be honest. You know, so. Again, not too fussy. I've got preferences again, but it's, if it's there. But yeah, very much sort of, again, that sort of, that complete switch into this new sort of lifestyle. And again, fighting all those elements that really was something that I'm not sure I would have achieved without the sort of support I got around me, which again, I feel very lucky to have had. I know a lot of people sometimes maybe not have that support network around them, but there are always people there to reach out to on various platforms, whether it's people like yourselves here on sort of community sort of things, whether it's medicinal sort of elements, charity helplines. But for me, I was very lucky in terms of having those friends and family members still there that in reality, a lot of them have been very close to no longer being in my life due to my behaviour under the influence. So I do find that something that I'll never be able to really repay, and will always sort of think back to people throwing themselves out there with support the minute I was literally picking myself off the ground. But yeah, a hugely difficult moment, but something I just sort of dived in with 2 feet, really. As you mentioned, sort of different metaphors, that sort of thing. Of course, it felt very much like a manifestation of what I've been going through, that sort of uphill struggle, marching on into the unknown, heading up there step by step, just having to pace those little steps one by one to add things up. At this point, I took up running for quite a bit as well. And again, I couldn't run a bath really at this point at all. It was something that I'd never saw myself doing. And again, those sort of little steps made little progress. And I had still the insecurity sometimes of people looking in on you, maybe if you're going for a run down the roadside, what are the people in the car thinking? Again, I was quite overweight, so I was quite self-conscious still, and really felt that really well, ultimately, that whatever effort I was putting in was more effort than the man sat at home on the sofa. So I just made those little steps, and one by one, that sort of 1K became 2K, became 5, became 10. And 11 months on from this sort of journey, I was lining up for the start of a marathon line, for really leaving that whole life behind, from being falling asleep on the end of the bar, grossly overweight, to now really heading out on the weekend and as much as I can into the fells as much as possible, running those sort of distances. And what I had then climbed the National Three Peaks and various bits of that point. So it was very much something that was a huge removal from the life before, a really much a right-hand turn. And for people looking in from the outside, must have been very bizarre as well, because all of a sudden, literally, light switch. And this character they've seen doing one particular activity was now almost reborn in this sort of different lifestyle. And really, I found huge solace in the outdoors for that reason, both mentally and physically. And was something that really felt like the place that I really felt like home, to be honest, and something that seemed to appease while I lost losing alcohol. I mean, I still sometimes pined for that sense of oblivion, that escapism. But the endorphin hit I may have got from alcohol, which was never sustained, was always on a come down afterwards and always a chance to top it up the next day to try and get back to those heights. With the hill walking and exercise, that endorphin was just a constant and there was no downside. And it was literally something that, again, sung to me and felt like a new addiction that really ignited.
Harrison, can I ask about the girl? And you know, I know that... how do you feel about it now? Because I know that heartbreak is something that can last quite a long time. Like, what position are you in now? When I find that bit out, I'll move on to my question. I just don't want to put my foot in it here.
No, absolutely fine. No, so so again, I suppose initially, although this change was for me and for those around me, I was trying to seek redemption at that front to try and win back this partner. That was my initial catalyst and my huge motivation really for this first change. Ultimately, that didn't result in that relationship rekindling. But that person was very selfless for the early days of this journey where she could have left me behind completely, but did show a lot of support and was very, very selfless. And again, something that really I don't think I'd have been able to go through this change without meeting her personally. It was very much when people talk sometimes of the sort of soulmate action sort of thing, I don't think it was something that perhaps was there forever, for soulmate for eternity. But I think very much I do believe you meet people for a certain reason. And I think for her at that point in my life, I can't see of any other reality. We were going to break up. It was inevitable. Inevitable. With my behaviour I was going through, we were about to move in together. It was going to come to a head. My secret life would no longer be secret. But every other scenario, I think, would have led me further into drinking. It would have just made me down in my sorrows. Whether this one of really becoming someone that I firmly believed I wasn't, that, again, is no way of me trying to paper over the fact that I was unfaithful. I've completely accepted the fact that what I did was out of order there. And very something that I see myself as a huge loyal person. So that was something that really, I suppose, shook my ethics and ethos to the core, really, the fact that I did that under the influence. But we had 2 years down the line, I was blocked on all sort of avenues in the end, sort of all social media fronts and various bits. 2 years down the line, I've just set this Fell Foodie account up, which was a different account to what I had previously. And she did discover this sort of element. And I started sharing my sort of stories on there quite publicly, what I've been going through. So what I'd shared previously to friends and family in the early sort of beginnings of this sobriety journey, I then shared now publicly to strangers on my second year of my soberversary, if you will. And she saw this and she just basically came out and reached out and said that, you know, I knew you could do this. I always believed you could get to this point to become the person you wanted to be. And it was a real sort of moment, I guess, of the chapter sort of feeling like it closed over. Again, this speaks so much of seeking redemption and seeking sort of apology from a lot of people that maybe you've harmed during your days of drinking. And she was the only one that really I wasn't able to speak to, and I guess, and make that sort of amends with. But having that sort of moment then, if that had happened maybe 3 months previously, I think I'd have seen it in a bit of a light and gone, oh, there's still a chance. I'm still chasing this. I've still gone, there's still an element there. But at that point, I was very much at peace with what had gone on. I felt in myself as if I'd done what I could at that point. Again, I was 2 years sober. I'd lost over 7 stone by this point, stopped smoking, completely changed my lifestyle, and was building back up and starting to repay my debts off. But receiving that message from her really was quite a finishing sort of moment on that sort of chapter. So, yeah, someone I'll always hold in high regard, I think, on that sort of front. But
it's great to hear. And I think that the reason I asked the question is because, you know, you whenever anyone does anything like this, they've got to do it for themselves, you know. And I suppose the danger of doing it for somebody else is that what you hope will happen might not happen, and could that send you backwards again rather than forwards? And I think this kind of relates to it as well. We've been talking a lot about this on our Bring a Brew Zoom calls, we call them, as part of our online community. Everyone brings a cup of tea and we have a chat about alcohol-free Brilliant. Life, how we're all getting on, all that kind of stuff. They're wonderful. They're such lovely highlights of my week, seriously, doing the Zoom calls. Brilliant. I love them. But giving up alcohol can be quite confronting. And I think what you said earlier about medicine turning to poison, you're right, you know, alcohol can help you to temporarily forget about some of your problems. And it doesn't solve them, absolutely not. And eventually we all know it makes them worse. But when you give up alcohol completely and it's out of your system for a good few months, suddenly you're forced to deal with those things head on, aren't you? Did you find it to be quite confronting getting sober in terms of things that you hadn't been where you've been trying not to actively think about, did you have to tackle them then head on in terms of the kind of mental health struggles?
I think you perfectly summed that up there, really. I think for me, hugely, yeah, it was very much something that becoming accountable towards that and no longer running away from those elements, no longer escaping from that sort of, having to face it, really. And finding a more positive vice to deal with it too, which was where exercise really came into its own for me. It was something that I don't consider myself cured from that sort of element. Some people talk about that depression and that. I had a brief spell left behind. For me, it's something that has been quite a lifelong journey, something that I do still suffer with occasionally, from time to time now. But exercise and various bits like that, and keeping sort of, I guess, we'll come onto the cooking element, I'm sure, in a bit, but even sort of the healthy eating sort of element too, eating sort of fresh produce as much as possible, something that really, again, all incorporated that sort of more healthy mindset. So I think really, again, it's like if you're trying to fuel a car, you wouldn't expect a car to run 100 miles with a really bad fuel source. So I think again, the same for sort of the person. You know, previously, it was alcohol and cigarettes sort of thing, and maybe sneaking down the kebab shop at 4 a.m. sort of to get my substances, basically, get my sustenance, sorry. Switching that all out again for more sort of hill walking, fresh drinks there, I suppose, copious boatloads of coffee, and more sort of healthy food and dishes was, again, a very different sort of fuel source, which, again, provides a much stabler foundation to go forward on. But for me, certainly, I think 3 months in was maybe the real moment that I had, what really felt like an epiphany moment, to be fair. It felt literally, I had this huge sort of weighing sense on my head that felt like a lead bubble in my head that was weighing me down. My head was pounding all the time. It felt really low. I was embarrassed walking around. I guess I'd come completely open, really accountable with my actions and who I'd become. So to everybody, really. So it felt like I'd gone back to my hometown. So this was now sort of quite, you know, it was almost, I guess, paranoia things coming in as well, all elements. And at 3 months in, I literally remember sort of walking down the street. I was in Carlisle at the time, at my hometown. I was walking down the high street. I started a lot of journaling at the time as well. So I used to go into coffee shops and take out there. And even pubs too. I used to still take myself off to the pub and sit in the corner with a Coke and write in my journal. I never wanted to become a taboo element of going to these places. I realise that's not for everybody. But for me, I didn't want to ever lose out those sort of social fronts and become someone that was no longer invited to things of various bits because I wasn't able to go to those locations. So you mentioned the stag do's early on. I've been on a few sober stag do's these days. I mean, they're quite a different experience, and I often get bored by about 1 o'clock in the morning, but I went on one a couple of months ago,
and you realise that clubbing is just, let's all stand in a loud room where we can't hear each other. The actual realities of it are very different, aren't they? Like, all I'm doing is listening to music that I wouldn't choose to listen to, really loudly, surrounded by people. Why am I here? Why did I used to like this?
I bloody love to go to a nightclub just to reach for the lasers and lose myself till 6 a.m. I'm still there. I'm there with my glow
with those little silver hot pants on, Freddie.
Yeah, with his neon vest.
I certainly will. I'll be there on the podiums in my mesh vest with my silver hot pants. I've still got it. I'm still young. You're still young, you Freddie. You've still got
you
it.
Keep clinging on. Keep clinging on.
I will.
On.
I'll keep clinging on to that youth.
Sorry, Harrison, what were you saying?
No, don't worry at all. It was the karaoke bar for me that was the final straw. I think these blokes couldn't sing sober, so let alone there after copious pints. That was me. Taxi back to the hotel. But once again, as you say, that morning after, and everyone's there feeling sorry for themselves, and there you are, fresh as a daisy. You never get sick of that feeling. You know, each day it's sort of brilliant. But really, that sort of that lead bubble I mentioned again, walking down that street at the time. There was a moment 3 months in that it literally just felt like it just burst in my head. And all of a sudden, I just felt quite weightless in various bits. And a lot of things I'd struggled to sort of comprehend for quite a while seemed to just sort of come flooding back. And I guess it's that sense that people talk about of almost feeling emotions again, I guess, and having that sort of sense or feeling that you almost lose, that you're so dulled down with alcohol at the time and so sort of senseless. That was a huge moment that really was quite overpowering in a way as well. And I think it went the other way for a bit, where it almost went euphoric for quite a while, when it was almost suddenly everything seemed as if it was one of those sort of musical films almost. You're walking down the street and everyone was dancing for you and signs were lighting up in your name. And also it got quite sort of that sort of element for me at one point, which was maybe some of the medicinal aspects I was taking at the time as well. But the two hand in hand, I think, really just sort of took me to these heights that felt astronomical. But yeah, I can definitely see that sort of moment of having to hit those head on. And so now, I guess, just being present with those now as well, I think, we are meant to feel moments of sadness in life, I think, in various bits. And I think it would be unusual not to. So always running away and chasing those away or seeking that sort of escapism via the bottle, as it was for me at the time, is something that's not going to be sort of a long a long process of going to work. So I think, yes, being present to those and accepting life for all its ups and downs.
Harrison, I want to talk more now about Fell Foodie and about being outdoors. But before we do that, when people stop drinking alcohol, and if you've been drinking at a level that you were, I mean, you mentioned before now, correct me if I heard this wrong, did you say drip tray specials?
Yeah, absolutely.
What is that?
Just explain what that is for somebody that doesn't know, if you don't
mind.
Is
that a northern thing, guys? Is that a Lancashire thing?
Cumbrian, thank you very much. But it's, again, I suppose working in that environment behind the bar, I mean, obviously for those who aren't too familiar with that sort of side, the drip trays are the bits that literally catch the drips, I guess, of the beer pumps. So whether that's the ale pump side, there's all the lot. So it can be quite a mix from, you know, some people might, they might even have wine or Prosecco on tap in some bars. I mean, various bits, but literally at the end of the day, they're usually sloshed down, just down the sink and are accounted for and basically logged for wastage, if you will, on certain bits. But sometimes it was there seen as another free dose of the elixir, as I dubbed it at the time. So it was
unreal. Unbelievable.
It'd be there literally. And again, it was another way of the coffee cup sort of going down the side of the shift, what could sometimes be 14, 16 hour shifts in that sort of environment. It was literally there just a way to covertly top up and keep going, I guess. So, you mentioned before with the biscuit side of things. I mean, I did have drinks that I very much enjoyed and more drinks I put more on a pedestal, but I was also more than happy to drink sort of the butts and the various bits that were getting thrown down the sink too. It was any way to get that sort of that fix, if you will.
And when you are drinking to the levels you talked about there and 20 pints a day, when you stop, if you're drinking heavily, a lot of people sort of go, shit, what am I meant to do now? There's an enormous gap to fill. And what we love hearing about with the people that come on the pod and share their stories in our community is this reconnection with nature. I did it myself. When I stopped drinking, I used to go to the coast and I'd be like, it's beautiful. I did not realise the coast was so beautiful. Listen to the birds and this new appreciation of the green fields of Lancashire and Cumbria, of the mountains, of the great outdoors. And it's a real thing, isn't it? Actually, filling that gap with something so glorious and so natural. And it's almost as though you sort of discover the world again. And here you are now with your account called Fell Foodie, basically cooking a stuff in the mountains. To me, it's a stuff of dreams. It's amazing.
So, as you say, I think largely it's that sense of presence, isn't it? I think that you lose so much in the drinking days where you aren't present a lot of the time. You're almost just under sedation in a way. So I think that sort of sense of presence that, again, in nature, you find yourself there all of a sudden picking up these little sights and sounds. And again, that was one of the beauties of lockdown, I think, at one point for its rarities was hearing those sort of birds and various bits of wildlife out there unrivaled with the sound of traffic. It was quite a chorus, really, at times that if you hadn't recognised it before, you almost couldn't ignore it during that point. But yeah, hugely, I mean, nature filled that hole massively. That was a huge part of my personal sort of daily activity, but I'm sure many have that same sort of affiliation too with that sort of front. But yeah, it was fantastic. And as you mentioned, that led on to sort of the Fell Foodie sort of name becoming dubbed. And I mean, cooking's been something that I've always loved from a very young age. One of the few passions that I've sort of kept going throughout that point, although it probably had a little bit of a time on the back burner during the heaviest drinking days, I guess, where again, the takeaways were probably more likely to be getting my businesses than the food markets. But it was something that, again, we're coming back on that sort of journey, picking up an exercise again, picking up that sort of fresh produce was a huge other element of time that I love spending. I love time sort of getting all the ingredients, finding the different products. I love the way food brought people together as well. It was quite a social, thing, which I'd missed from the sort of alcohol side of things, heading out for dinners or arranging things to come round. And again, that feeling of happiness that people got when they sort of enjoyed good food, that was stuff that they were passionate about too. So that was something that quite quickly I fell back into and found the whole practice of sort of cooking and preparing dishes quite mindful as well. So I came up with the name Fell Foodie at the time, which initially was a completely anonymous account. From those who don't know, in the Cumbria here, we call the hills fells. So again, so fell was that sort of way there to sort of show appreciation for my roots, I guess, in a way. And foodie being a less pretentious term for gastronome. basically. So put the two together, bit of alliteration. And again, was an anonymous sort of mask to hide behind as well, in a way, when I was still sort of rebuilding myself in that sort of film, which again, I think is something that quite often we use alcohol for, as that mask as well, to sort of avoid a lot of issues we might be suffering from, or to run away from certain elements. So again, still, I wasn't quite prepared to reveal me fully, but I wasn't sharing my personal stuff there at all. No pictures of me. It was very much the food I was making at home at this point, and then the views I was seeing from the hills that I was now embracing and enjoying as sort of my escapism. And this sort of escalated where I started to take quite extravagant packed lunches out in the hills with me, stuff I made sort of the night before, packing them up, and getting a lot of comments from sort of either peers or people passing by in the mountaintops of sort of the almost extravagant picnics I was having on top of the mountainside. And someone just literally threw a comment at me one day saying, well, why didn't you start doing it out here from scratch on a stove as a bit of a challenge? And again, not to shirk that at all, that's exactly what I did. I bought a camp stove and started packing out my little kitchen in my rucksack and taking it out into the outdoors with me. And the next minute I was hiking this backpack up the top of the mountains and preparing what is now sort of restaurant style dishes up in these sort of remote locations on minimal equipment. So, and then the fellow foodie wasn't no longer anonymous and sort of then became sort of quite synonymous with the name as well. So that's where it all sort of began, these roots. And these days you can find me up there quite often preparing all sorts of things. I mean, I've baked cakes out there, loaves of bread. I've been doing sort of like pastas from scratch and like steak dishes, risotto. All
out
on top there.
How do you bake a loaf of bread on a mountain? How do you do that?
Yeah. Well, yeah, actually, I mean, recently I was lucky to go on, I was lucky to get a piece on the BBC actually recently to cook out there. And I cooked a cake live on television. So you can actually visualise that fully and watch that piece on there. So to prove that it's not just a facade, but I've got a little bit of kit that works a little bit like a convection oven that sits on top of the stove. Of course, the difference with the camp stove to being at home is you've got one heat source. So unlike the oven, of course, where you've got quite circular heat, you've only got the one heat source with the camp stove. But this little bit of kit has a hole in the middle, a bit like a bundt cake. Thank you, Davina. And a little bit of bundt cake sort of style with a heat head through the middle.
This is community member Davina who's just posted in the chat. I saw the cake. It looked delish.
There we are. I haven't paid her. That was a genuine
Listen,
comment.
Harrison, if me and you were to trek up Hell Valley, you'd have to make do with my flask of tomato soup and a squashed eggy bap. What could you bring to the table?
Well, we can have the soup as a starter. That sounds good. I'll pass on the egg bap, though, thank you. But if you bring some for dessert, then I'll sort the main.
Right, I'm going to hold you to that.
There we are. But it's so very much the heat goes through the middle, hits the top of the lid, and that creates that sort of convection style oven, if you will. That means you can sort of bake a loaf. I've done toad in the hole out there, various bits, and sort of focaccias and lasagnas and all sorts of stuff on there. So yeah, for me it's
a lasagna.
Yeah, absolutely. So I mean,
on a hill.
On a mountain.
Well, that's it. The satire is not lost on me, to be fair. I think sometimes the challenge aspect is what I enjoy. I appreciate when I'm looking to sort of basically expand people's horizons into what they treat their sort of food and nutrition when they're out and about. I wouldn't expect them to go to the levels that I do, but when I'm there grating sort of some fresh nutmeg in the fell winds, it's all blown off the hillside. I can see why it's not for everyone. But for me, again, it's that challenge aspect of showing what can be produced on that mineral equipment. And again, that's sort of as well a bit of a homage back to sort of the ancestors too, I guess, cooking back in the outdoors and taking those ingredients back out there.
Harrison, how do you feel when you are there on a beautiful day? I mean, I know they're rare in the Lake District beautiful days because the weather can be shocking. How do you feel when you're baking a loaf or poodling around with a lasagna outdoors compared to the 6th of June 2016? I mean, my God.
It's worlds apart, really. It really is. I mean, looking back, it's obviously as the years go by more now into what is coming up to be sort of my sixth year sober now. It still feels quite a present sort of time in my head and looking back, but I suppose it does become more of a stranger as years go on. But again, they couldn't be further apart, the lifestyles. And when I'm heading out there on the top of those hills, for me, it's just something I'm just really at peace with, really. And something that I haven't really got any of those sort of issues or constraints that I had previously. And again, that sort of rush you get from the sort of the exercise of heading up there as well, that uphill sort of climb, sometimes enjoying that with other people too and having that sort of social element too, is just a way of just living, really. I mean, present for so long, I was just existing and not wanting to be here, looking for an escape or just really going through a level of sedation to keep myself present in the world for other people rather than really where I wanted to be, which was turning the lights off, you know. But it was, for now, it feels very much that I do take each day as it comes, and really also embrace sort of the highs in those days too. So it's quite a mindful practice, and I also really feel like it's somewhere we're meant to be in the outdoors. I think it's somewhere we quite often lose quite a little bit in terms of like the city-based lifestyle, which I don't think we're really designed for. But heading back out there again as well, we live such busy lives all the time. We're always worrying about really insignificant things that are either really far away, or what someone down the road's been saying about us, or what's been going on down there, or my favourite product's not in the shop, and it's just insignificant. So I think heading up there to those fell tops sometimes puts it back into perspective and allows us to slow down as well, I think, and just take in what is really there and what life is really about, which I think is just those sights, sounds, nature, care for others, good sustenance, healthy produce, and it just ticks all boxes for me, and something that really has become something that's become quite an integral part in both my recovery and my daily lifestyle. So something that, yeah, you'll often see me up there with the camp stove on the top of the fell tops.
Harris, I think it's such an amazing story. I think in terms of where you've been and where you're at now, and I love the way that you've embraced the outdoors and fell foodie and just totally turned your life around. I think, as you say, it's amazing to look back down that mountain and really see how far you've come. What I'd love to know is what's next, and is it just to carry on growing the account and to keep cooking amazing food? What are your plans?
Well, it very much just started.
A 10-course taster meal on the top of Ben Nevis.
Well, if I get a few Sherpas to help, then definitely it's.
I'll come.
It's yeah. I think for me, I mean, it's something that very much I started as a hobby. It was something that was getting completely anonymous. I never really aimed to really hit anything from it. It's now become my full-time career. I mean, I left my job sort of at the start of the year and various bits like that. And it's something that I never really aimed for at all. And really looking back on those years in the past, there were so many times that I didn't want to be here at all that I don't take the days for granted, really. I just see it as very much something that, you know, often there's a mantra in some circles of one day at a time. And although I don't often subscribe to that sort of other elements of those mantras, that's something that has really always sung to me, that just living one day at a time. And again, if I can remain sober by midnight each day, then I'll continue on and just resetting that clock each time. And so heading into the future again, I've no real personal aims or various bits in there. It's very much something that I just look to continue trying to be the person I wanted to become, be a better person for others, be a better sort of family member and friend than what I was in the past. I've been lucky to have some fantastic bits of coverage recently in my own personal life. With various magazines and media and stuff, and again, it's becoming the job, and some brilliant opportunities and even affiliations with brands and stuff that I'd never really have had before, which, again, it's all people supporting this message further for me that, again, I share what I do now in the fells, heading up those, cooking those different dishes, trying to inspire more people to enjoy more food in the outdoors, because for me, I've always loved my food, so why not mix the two up? But also, still sharing those moments of darkness as well and where I've come from and being just real about it. I mean, I'm not someone that's like, oh, it's all rosy, it's all glossed over, I'll never think about it again. The lockdown was extremely difficult. I mean, there was moments in that really I'd never felt closer to going back to the bottle at times in that sort of front, but feel lucky that I got through that, remained sober, probably at sort of a little bit of disregard for maybe the scales at home and various bits. I think there was a bit more consumption of other goods going on during that point, but again, it was a different way of getting through that particular moment. So heading to the future, No, it's difficult. No real further plans. I guess just a few more fells ticked off, a few more dishes done, just meeting some good people and hopefully sharing that story further. Because for me, it's always a case of if that can help one person, then it makes my struggles all the more worthwhile.
And it's just like removing alcohol was just the start, wasn't it? It's unlocked so much for you.
I do feel as if, I mean, I was quite, I mean, again, there's so much change that's gone on, of course, but I ultimately think that I was still there as a person. My personality was still very much the same. I was just under this cloud, under this change through the substance. But very much so of what initially I sought out to become the catalyst for change, to get rid of my depression elements, literally leaving that behind completely has become a huge moment for everything else, and really something that now a lot of people mention about, would you ever consider drinking again and various bits? And of course, you can never say never sort of on these sort of fronts. But for me, it doesn't have a place in my life anymore on various bits. And then sometimes my mindset's different where perhaps maybe I could have one drink now. But why would I risk that? From what I've gained from all that sort of time now through that bit, from moving to sort of a different area in the lakes now, even I wasn't driving at the time either, past my driving test, to moving on to getting another work, to losing that weight, to heading on to personal achievements like mountain climbs and marathons, to then setting up this account, to then to creating a new sort of career for myself. I mean, it's all come from leaving that sort of alcohol behind, cutting that out. And although that relationship wasn't rekindled, that was a big catalyst for it as well. I found myself being in a much better place for that, and lucky to be sort of in better relationships with other people at that point, sort of, that I wouldn't have been able to become that individual if I still had alcohol present in my life.
Harrison, at this point, can I just say thank you to our community members who are watching this recording and putting their questions in the chat box, for the hard-hitting questions that have been posted from the chat box. Have you ever got to the top of a mountain and realised you've forgotten one crucial ingredient?
all the time, and it will happen again. Yes. I mean, one time I was going out to cook some steaks and I packed everything but the frying pan. I had one where I was going out for risotto and I packed all the celery, carrots, onion, garlic out there, my veg stock, but didn't bring the risotto rice. And I've had ones as well where I've got to the top with a new stove I've been testing out for a while that didn't have a little self-igniter on the side, so I didn't pack a lighter with me. But I've been so used to having a self-ignition. I got all the way to the top. I was actually wild camping in the fells, and I have a friend of mine, camped up, got all the stuff prepped, went to light the stove. Arse, haven't got it.
Brilliant.
So I headed headed back down the fell, went to the shop, got a lighter, and headed all the way back up again and met my friend, and we had like a midnight dinner in the end. But it happens all the time, and it happened again. I mean, there's so much to sort of pack and go that way. I try to be quite attentive, but I'm also quite a spontaneous character. I'm not someone who's making a big list the night before and ticking it all off. I just sort of embrace the moment a bit. But it's not always the end of the world. But it provides some funny occasions. Thankfully, it's not happened when I've been entertaining any groups or any sort of recorded moments so far.
On the BBC. There are serious questions, of course there are as well. And that was great question. I loved that question. But if you saw yourself, Harrison, at the end of the bar at 21 years old, and you are you now, fell foodie, what would you say to yourself?
I think whatever I'd say to that individual he'd just laugh you out of the pub. I don't think he'd just embrace it. It's just so, I mean, even further down the line, even to sort of 25 when I was still in that lifestyle, my 26-year-old self talking to my 25-year-old self, I mean, it's worlds apart. It's just literally, I couldn't have comprehended that stage of what was to come. It was such a shock, that moment of that change, such a big collapse of my existence in a way, of what I've become to be my life and what I've built for so long, that it couldn't have been foreseen. But looking back, I guess the one thing I'd probably say is probably just to stay, because for so often I didn't want to be here, and I was always looking for the way out. So I think the word stay would probably be the only thing I'd maybe pass on.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Just one final comment here. Davina, who's watching, says, love it. This has been the best podcast recording guest. It's been amazing. Harrison, I knew you had a remarkable story to share, and I was dead excited saying to Freddie and Bear, got this chap on from the latest trip. You're going to love him. He's right up our street. I didn't realise quite how powerful your story would be. So thank you for sharing so honestly, for being so inspiring. It has been ace. Thank you. Where can people find out more about you and all these cooking up mountains and stuff?
thank you for your comments. It's so you can find me online as Fell Foodie, just all as one word, on all the basic platforms there, mainly Instagram, but I'm on all the social platforms website wise and again, if anyone has any further questions, please don't hesitate to reach out. I'm always willing to sort of share what I can, my personal experiences there. But yeah, thank you very much for listening to my story, and it's been a pleasure to be on.